Welcome. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. Yes, today we have another great show dealing with metaphysics and spirituality and science and a number of other related concepts and subjects. I thought tonight would be good to talk about spiritual use of time, simply because most people claim they don't have enough time to do a lot of things, and some people feel they have too much time and may have other issues and problems different from that. And I thought I'd cover a lot of these areas, as well as what is time, because we've talked about that before. Some of you may have heard those shows, but as usual, I'll usually add more stuff in, you know, I'll put more things into the subject than I have said in the past. So even if it sounds like you've heard some things before, you're going to get a lot of other kinds of information besides that, maybe a new understanding. So let's start, as I usually like to start with, is a definition. What the heck is time? Time is a kind of a strange thing. It's one of the hardest things for most human beings to understand, because it's really something that is changeable, and it has sort of a spongeable nature to it, meaning that you can kind of squish it or leave it out, let it out more. It, at times, fools people. Time is a measure, but it's not a measure from one clock to another or from one place to another in either movement or otherwise. Time is actually a measure of the quality that space is becoming more intelligent in activity between two or more things, or is becoming less intelligent and is developing a more energetic pattern to itself. When space is becoming more intelligent in activity, there's less energy involved in any activity, and it also takes less time to achieve any two activities together or more. So time is a measure of it. It's called a quality of space. Now that may be hard to follow, may be hard to understand, because it's a very highly conceptual understanding. So another way to look at it is that when someone is being selfish and they are not communicating in a perfectly intelligent way to someone or something else, that causes the quality or consciousness of the time between them and somebody else, I should say the space between them and somebody else, to become more separated. They become more separated from the other person or thing, and vice versa. And the result of all that is time becomes wasted. So it takes more time to do something that has less intelligence to it and uses up at the same period of time more energy. Kind of an interesting inversion between most people's thought of time, and it's a little difficult, again, to follow it, but by the end of tonight's show, it will make much more sense. So when people say, well, I don't have enough time to do something, what does that really mean? It means that they're not being intelligent in their activities, and there's a certain level of unintelligence. Now, what is intelligence? Intelligence is the third part of God's mind. It's the third part of what we think of as the creator of our universe. And when this perfect mind exists, it takes no time at all to do anything you would want to do or choose to do within our universe. However, when you aren't thinking like God thinks, exactly like God thinks, and you aren't functioning in activity the same as God, then the result is that it takes time. Time becomes wasted. Time becomes separated from space. And instead of being a part of space intact, it becomes a separated part of space. Now, you might say, oh, that's that metaphysical mumbo-jumbo. Actually, that's not. What I just said has to do more with physics and science. So how does that apply? Well, it appears, and is somewhat true, that time and space are the same thing. They're intact together at some level in modern-day physics. And when we think of time and we think of space in a separate way, that's just an illusion. And the correction of that illusion is that time and space are part of the same thing. They aren't exactly the same thing, obviously, because they can be separated, but they're part of the same thing together. And this all together is part of the third part of God's mind. When we don't think in the way that God thinks, we're not creating light. And the lack of light produces space and time. Most of our universe is not thinking the way God thinks, almost all of it at the present time. So there's a huge amount of space in our universe, and an inordinate amount of time has transpired since its inception, as well as most of the light of the universe has disappeared. And so when we look out into what we call our universe, in at least three dimensions of time-space, we see mostly darkness. There are other parts of the universe that still have a lot of light in them, but they're higher dimensions that we are unaware of while we are in the physical dimension. So to our perspective, the universe is vastly large. A tremendous amount of time has taken place. Nearly 14 billion years in the part of the universe we're aware of, about three times that amount in the part of the universe that we cannot be aware of, about 42 billion years have transpired. And those are years that light can travel in as well. So it's a very big universe that we are in, at least in our perspective of size. And most of it is without light, most of it is dark, and most of it has quite a bit of separated time from space. Plus, there's a lot of energy. Now, the energy is condensed into small areas. And if you were to average all the energy out, it isn't a real lot of energy per every square meter. Very small amount, actually. But in concentrated places, there's a lot of energy. And most of it's in galaxies. Some of it's in gas between galaxies. And this energy is a product of all of the unintelligent activity that happened in our universe from its inception. So it's kind of interesting when we think of, well, energy is good and we have pockets of energy. In reality, there would be no energy if we were all thinking as God thinks and we were all intelligently acting together, using no energy to achieve any particular result, and therefore using up no time. The universe would be very different. It would be a big ball of light. But that isn't what we experience. So spiritual use of time means to try to join time closer to space, try to increase the amount of intelligence in our activity so we're closer to God, and that we can do by thinking more like God thinks. But we have to also take action more like God, because there are three parts to God. Thought are the first two parts, but the third part is the intelligent action or lack thereof. When people complain about not having enough time, generally speaking, what that really means is that they are not very intelligent in their activity, and so they are wasting a lot of time. And again, the wasting of time comes from illusions. That means there's things they are unaware of or that they have misperceptions about. That's an awareness, but it's an awareness incorrectly about their world, about the sensations coming from their world around them. And these misperceptions add up to a lot of misplaced energy that takes up space around them and, strangely, inside them. Inside the very senses that are created by the centers within their bodies. So the energy not only is in the general environment that a person is making these illusions, mistakes in, and wasting time in, but it's actually inside their own bodies and becomes a part of them, a dark part. And these illusioned energies then create a wasting of time that prevents the person or people who have it from being able to save time and to be able to, we'll say, communicate correctly with others and create interactions with others that helps everybody, not just themselves, to grow in awareness and eventually consciousness of God, and then think more like God in a creative sense, and then take actions that are part of building more, creating more of God. All right. So one of the questions a lot of people ask me is, how come if time is what you say it is, why isn't it the same for everybody? Why does it seem the same, for everybody in the world around us? People seem to agree that time's moving at this speed or that speed, etc. Well, that's the interesting part about it. In terms of the averages of time, because the world around us is constructed by the averages of the thought and interactions of the people that live, say, on planet Earth, the perspective of time for most people is averaged, and we agree on this average in an odd way, or a series of ways, that is all based upon sort of a common set of illusions. But some people don't. And some people experience the world in a considerably different way than what the averages are. But the majority of people actually do. And it's this majority of perception that leads us to the illusion that time is some kind of constant that does not change, is not spongible, and does not change, and has... It's like a container you can put things in, but it doesn't change itself. And everybody has the same experience of time, or should be having the same experience of time. But that is the illusion. The truth of the matter is that time, being a dimensional part of space, separates itself as we make mistakes. And as people make more mistakes in their life, they experience greater sensation of separation of time, and their perceptions of their environment are grossly changed from the perceptions of others who make fewer mistakes because they're less selfish and join time with space more. So the whole universe that they're perceiving is in effect a different universe than the others around them. This has a lot of important, we'll say, information for a person who wants to live either more spiritually or just is more interested in knowing about it, as some of you folks who are listening tonight might be. So this changes the whole aspect of what a person perceives as reality. Most people think that there is an absolute or a, we'll say, accurate or truthful or a concrete, some people might use that word, reality to the world around them. And they think that existence is tied to this ability to determine what this absolute reality is. That is an illusion, because each person is altering reality by how much they are creating of light and form or virtue or not, and how selfish they are or not. And so each person is experiencing the universe in significantly different ways and is altering it on an average scale together with all other people around them in significantly different ways. The spiritual meaning to this is the following. For those of you who are Buddhists, this may make more sense. And that is, based upon what I just said, and this is a little bit hard to understand, not to say that everything else I've said isn't, but this may be a little hard in a more, we'll say, spiritual way to understand, that those people who have the most spiritual viewpoint understand that the time and space around them is in a constant flux caused by the level of spiritual development, consciousness, selfishness, wasting of time, bringing together of time with space and creating virtue of all those that are around them. And the more that they expand their consciousness to include more of the world, the more they become aware of this amazing relative aspect to existence. Now, why is that so important? Well, getting out of your skin, so to speak, and recognizing that the universe around us, especially the planet, is created by a combination of consciousnesses that are constantly altering and changing the time and space, the dimensionality, the very existence of everything that you think is real, changes your perspective of yourself and God. It makes us far more responsible in a creative fashion for the world in which we're in, for every second we exist within it, and recognize that everybody is co-responsible for the world, and it isn't some fictitious or real, if you believe it otherwise, thing created by some god or great beings in some set-in-stone fashion that is both predetermined because of its being set-in-stone and is further, we'll say, created by beings outside of us. And therefore relieving us of the responsibility for all that is around us. And this is a very different, the worldview of people who become relativistic in terms of time and space become far more conscious because they take greater responsibility for all that is. They believe in the co-creative nature of their existence, with all that is, especially God, and they no longer believe that they don't have responsibility for distant issues or distant things, because it all comes from the combined consciousness, the combined interactions of all, especially people, on planet Earth or any other planet that might exist. That's a mouthful. That's a lot to think about. But since we're talking about the spiritual use of time, it's very important to take responsibility for what time is and isn't, and how we are affecting it, and how space and time are so interconnected. The more we are selfish, the more we distance ourselves from everything and everybody, making it more difficult for us to communicate more intelligently the next time if we were already selfish before this. It's a thing called karma that is what we're really talking about. Now, how does karma fit into this? Well, karma is a causal issue. It has to do with cause and effect separated by time. And we know that time comes from consciousness being too low to create intelligent actions between beings. And then you end up with the separation of time from space, and there being a lot of energy. The energy produces forces, because energy against energy produces a thing called force. And at the same point, when all this is taking place, all of it, time becomes separated from space because it's a measure of the lack of intelligent activity. So more and more time is being used for any activity we take, and this is the foundation of how to, we'll say, become both more spiritual and more co-creative in virtue or light and form with our Creator. It's fascinating. So there's a, if you have followed so far, and this is not easy, because I always do the hardest stuff in the first 40 minutes of the show, because I fear by then I burned everybody out, and then I can talk about the practical solutions of things. But if you followed all this, this is a kind of amazing way of altering our perceptions towards a more correct way and living a more responsible life, recognizing that we are intimately involved with this idea of wasting time, things taking time, intelligent actions not getting realized with others, and all of the world around us being a co-responsible issue that each one of us is involved in for all, every second that we exist. We're all involved in this co-responsibility of wasting time. By the way, time is most difficult not to waste while we're physically alive. Illusion is the greatest because there is so much energy and so little cohesive spiritual thought and lowered consciousness in the physical dimension, where, of course, we're all living right now, in comparison to any other dimension of time and space. All these things go against us, so it just takes a huge amount of time to do a very small amount of activity. Let me give you an example, a practical one. Let's go to the next major dimension of time and space. That's the astral. What's time like there? Well, let's take an hour here. In an hour, let's say that the average person here, an hour of what we perceive of as time, may be able to, let's say, write 20 pages of some kind of biographical information about themselves. You take that same hour that we're using here, and you apply it to the astral world, and it becomes, at least for most people who live in the astral world, the majority, anywhere from 12 to 15 hours. Now, why do they have so much more time? Because they're not wasting time as much, because their consciousness is higher. And the energy factors are less energetic, less dense, even though the frequency of energy is much higher, there's much less of it. And so it's easier to create things as there's less forces, because force is one energy against another. If there's less energy, you have less forces. And people in general have a bit higher consciousness than they used to have, at least while they were physically. There is another factor, which is more esoteric, and that is that people live in more segregated in consciousness and time areas of the astral world. They don't usually commingle. So someone who lives in the second astral subworld doesn't simultaneously, at least, live in the fifth or the sixth. They may go to those areas to serve, but they don't live in them at the same time. And vice versa. Here, we're kind of all crunched together. Humanity is crunched in what is known as the fifth subdimension of the physical world. And pretty much, we're all here together. But that means we're co-mingling our consciousnesses at all the different levels that we exist at together. And this causes a lot more forces to be developed very quickly between everybody. Since it's all averaged, and if you're averaging a whole dimension of people compared to just one subdimension of people, the averages would create a lot more forces, which they do, in the physical world to live than in the astral world. So it's a lot easier to live in a subdimension like the astral world than in the physical. You might say, well, why is that true? Why are these subdimensions exist in these higher dimensions of time and space, but they don't exist for people, at least, in the physical world? Well, other than people when they first die or rarely become ghosts in the etheric world, everybody lives in the fifth dimension because the density of energy changes time and space to the point where it's almost impossible for any specific or significant length of time to live outside of the fifth dimension. It becomes to the point where, because there is so much energy, we're kind of entrapped here. Now, a few people occasionally will leave their bodies, their physical bodies, and live briefly in their etheric bodies. Children do this, actually. And they experience the time dilation issue, meaning they actually have more time, just like people in the astral world. Not quite nearly as much. They don't have 12 or 15 times or 21 times. But they have maybe a third more time to live in. Ghosts do, and people when they first die do. Which means that to their observation, we are barely moving. We're just wasting a lot of time. We're going really slow. We're wasting time here. And they get so much more done in the same period of time, whatever they choose to do. Of course, there isn't a heck of a lot to do in the etheric world. After a short period there, most people are ready to move on to go to the astral world. But still, people do stay in the etheric world because they're interested in what happens when they die and physically. And who's going to come to the funeral? What's going to happen with this relative or that person that's important in their life? Those kinds of things kind of keep them around for weeks sometimes or so. And they actually do exist in this relatively small time dilation, which is definitely perceivable, though. Fascinating, isn't it? So the spiritual use of time has a lot to do with where you're living. Because if you're living in the physical world, there are many more constraints. You have to live with the increased karma of being compressed by the forces of so much energy. We live the karma of almost everybody on this planet, even though they may live very far away from us. People who live closer in time and space, we experience more karmic sharing. More karmic, we'll say, effects from. Someone who lives on the other side of the planet is less, but still it's a great deal more than for people who live in the astral world, or even higher dimension than that. So it's this karma thing gets more shared as forces go up and people kind of crunch together. We're sharing our karma more together. We're sharing the effects of our selfishness more together. And we're experiencing those effects in time and space together. Pretty interesting stuff, huh? Now, I've had it posed to me this question, and Well, I answer it as best as I can. How do you limit the effects of so many others averaging such great amounts of karma and creating so many forces? And the answer is to serve them. The more you serve them, the more the effects of others' indiscretions, illusions, selfishness, forces affect you. Now, it sounds good. Then there's the old concept issue. Why is that the case? And the answer is pretty interesting. Once we serve, our focus is not on ourselves. And if you recall, the real problem about other people's forces created around us and other people's, therefore, mistakes affecting us is because we are experiencing those effects within us. But those effects come from the energies that those people produce following our thought in some way. We have to share some of their thought, and we also have to have interactions that resemble some of theirs for that energy to find itself into us and create a deadening of our centers, reduction in our consciousness, and on and on. But when you're serving others, your focus is 100%, if it's true spiritual service, 100% out towards the others. And if it's near your capability of service, then you're in true spiritual service, the true definition. And the amount of energy that's around you does not get inside. You may expend more energy exteriorly about a number of things because you're still part of the world. But internally, it will not age you, it will not disrupt your centers, it will not reduce your senses, nor will it obstruct your thinking and thought or your overall level of consciousness. All because you're in true spiritual service. Wow. Okay, and that's because energy follows thought. And it also follows other energy, which is interaction. So if your interaction is part of spiritual thinking and it's creating more light in form, virtue, then you're impervious to the forces around you as far as they affect you in an internal sense. Yes, they may slow down your ability to even serve, and they may slow down your ability to interact, but they will not decrease your ability to live or to experience life in a fulfilling and meaningful way. Wow. Service, spiritual service, is the inoculation and answer for a sea of forces caused by the negative karma on a planet as selfish, especially as Earth is. There are other planets where they are near being sacred, or they are sacred planets, where they produce very little negative karma, and where time is in a minimal way separated from space, so people have a lot more of it, and they don't waste it, so they do many more things in the same period of time, which is cool. They get to live a much greater life. However, here, this is a relatively primitive planet that has the opposite. And the only way to get around it is to spiritually serve. Of course, if we were living on one of these nicer planets, spiritual service would be second nature to us already. And the folks that aren't doing that wouldn't be, or were significantly not doing that, wouldn't be living on that planet with us. Now, I know there's some of you out there right now saying, okay, next life, I'm going. Where are those planets at? Can you give me their address? I'm on my way, you know? The weird thing about this is that when we are truly in soul consciousness, we so want to serve as we did before, and that's the reason we're here now, that we would rather be on a primitive or more primitive planet where there is all these terrible separations of time and space and created problems of bad karmas and you name it, because our service is more important, more helpful here. And if we go to some planet that's sacred and virtually everybody walks around being a pretty good reflection of God, I don't knock those people for doing that. They're more soul-like. That's wonderful. And we've got to have planets like that, by the way, to balance out Earth. But still, there is a need, a great need, for souls to be present here on Earth and to be doing something in physical form that incarnates at least at representing the soul, so that we just don't destroy this world and we learn new ways to deal with evil and darkness for the whole universe's sake. So there's a real important issue here, and we shouldn't lose sight of that just by saying, well, gee, I'm going someplace better than this in my next life. No, you will most likely, very likely, decide to stay here and continue in this difficult sea of force battle of trying to overcome the karma from the averages and reach a new level of a more spiritual world in which time is not at least wasted to anywhere near the level that it presently is. So that's kind of where we're hopefully going to head to. Now, if we're going to actually make it there, that's a whole other story. And we'll talk a little bit about that in the next segment. Yeah, we're coming up to that break time. So I would like you to think about what I've said so far, because this is the foundation for tonight's show. It's the concepts. From this point, we'll talk about some practical matters, some practical issues, and what we can do to live more spiritually, considering the use of time. Okay, so for right now, we'll take a break. It'll be about 2.5 minutes or so. And then when we come back, we'll get to the practical side of the spiritual use of time. And we'll be back in 2.5 minutes from, give or take, right now.
Hun, what book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of, about romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hun, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower. MacFlower.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. Tonight we're talking about the spiritual use of time. I probably numbed out a few people with that first section of the show. Getting into time is really highly conceptual, difficult to understand, but well worth spending some time on because it explains so much of why things are the way they are. I love it, of course, because I'm into the science and stuff. Some of you may say, yeah, but I don't know if I can take 40 minutes of that. Okay. Well, I won't be so deep about that sort of stuff in the rest of the show, and we still got a lot more to go. So let your brains cool off here. Okay, so we've got some foundations of how come this whole thing works this way. I find it fascinating. You may find it, well, difficult. But the most important thing to remember is that there's a practical side to time. I mean, if you really get what it's about, then you can make it your friend rather than your enemy, so to speak, and it could be a practical part of your spiritual discipline as well. And that's what I really want to get into for the most of the rest of tonight's show. When people come to me with, we'll say, burdensome levels of issues of time in their life, most of it is usually that the illusion of their personal interests has reduced their perception of reality to such a narrow range that they don't see the forest through the trees, so to speak. They aren't able to recognize that they could live their life in very different ways in which they would have all the time they want to do anything in. Now, you might say, oh, yeah, that's for you to say. You could do that, maybe. But no, anybody can do this. And I'm going to give you some practical suggestions here because it is not just someone who might be, you know, super conscious or whatever that can make these corrections in their life to make it of any value. I think this is valuable for most people, if not everybody. You do have to understand some of the things that I said in the first part of the show, but mostly what you need to do is to make an evaluation of how you're living selfishly and make some changes about that more than truly understand all the concepts about time. It helps. It'll help. But even if you didn't get it all, you'll still be able to use some of these ideas. Let's start off with someone who finds that they've created their life in a way in which they have various activities that they want to do, and some of these activities involve others, some of them do not. There is a difference here, and we'll talk about that in a little bit. But regardless, at the end of each day, they feel frustrated and sometimes depressed or sometimes upset, fearful, because they have not done, accomplished, they might say, a number of the activities that they had thought they needed to or wanted to during the period of time that the day took place in. And this could be true whether it's a day, a week, a month. It doesn't matter. I'm using a day right now for simplicity. Okay. What's wrong? Most people say, well, what's wrong is there's just not enough time. Or what's wrong? Some people might go beyond that and say, well, I want to do these things because they're so important, and I can't not do some of them because others depend upon me, and blank, 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 and on and on and on. Okay, what's wrong with that? Well, when we are in that dilemma, we have reached too low of a level in which we have used our intelligence to create interactions. Let me give you an example. Let's say that, well, I got to get to work. And so the only thing I can do is to get on the freeway and wait for 45 minutes before I can get to my exit and spend a lot of time in traffic. And I'm at the mercy of what traffic is like that way day and whether the weather's good or bad and on and on and on. Their supposition, that person's supposition, is that they have no choices. They have no other effects in how they get to work, what places that they work at, what times they work of the day, whether they even need to have the job they have, if that's what they consider to be their job. And many other factors that come into play. And whether or not they have to be driving. And whether or not they have to take some other form, maybe a public transportation. And whether or not there are every other choice they made about this particular situation is in any way an intelligent choice. There are so many creative choices we have to make, and most people don't choose the creative choice. They choose the choice that the majority of other people are doing. Well, everybody's taking a car, particularly if you live in the western part of the United States, there isn't a lot of public transportation. Well, first of all, one solution would be possibly to carpool, because there is some advantages to this in that if you only drive like one day out of, say, four, the other 3 days you can be doing something else other than driving while you're going to work, if that's how you're going to get to work. I like the idea of changing your work hours if you can. Work from home some of the time or some other location some of the time. And combining all these ideas together. And then in addition, maybe even finding a different place to work that allows you to work at off hours when and in a closer relationship to where you live so that much less time is spent going to work. All of those things are possible. The point here is that the intelligent action and interaction with others has to do with our own choices in life to begin with, and not vice versa. If you are doing things for the service of others, and let me try to get to this point, let's say that instead of going to your job, you are trying to be of service to others, then the entire situation turns around. Why does it turn around? Because when you're in service, the job or whatever it is that you're choosing to do is not a labor, but it is a means of reaching a state of joy through giving wisely to others. So you have a different perspective on all the time that is expended in being of service. The whole thing kind of turns around. But we're not going to deal with that for right now. I just wanted to bring that in here to let you know it. So everything about our lives is contingent upon prior choices that we have made. And you almost have to wipe the slate clean if you're going to get to true spiritual use of time. You can't just change one thing because they're all interrelated and interdependent upon your level of consciousness and your capability to serve. And if you want to spiritually use time, these have to be brought up to this higher level, and then you have to virtually revamp your whole life, not just a single thing. Well, I'm going to ride a bicycle to work, or I will carpool, or I'll do any of these things. Because now the time you have is about how much you're serving others, not about how much you're getting from someone by doing a labor. And the value of the time has a different value because it's no longer about getting money, which is compressed time and energy, for your services, but rather it's for giving. giving to others. And so the value changes and everything about what you do changes. Wiping the slate clean is difficult for most people because it means you've got to start from every activity in your life and make an evaluation of that particular activity in terms of whether or not it's more spiritual or less spiritual, and then how much time it is wasting because it's not spiritual. And then you decide whether you want to stay that at that level of selfishness or you would prefer to be less selfish and therefore live more spiritually, and you will have more time, obviously, as well at the same time. This is a difficult thing, and this type of evaluation could take literally months for some people to do because it means almost every element, almost every minute of a person's life needs to be evaluated rather than, well, I have to go to work, or I have to earn this much money, or I have to do this activity or that activity. Instead, everything becomes a choice about how you're going to live your life, and then things change radically. Now, some of you may be saying, and I wouldn't be surprised if you weren't saying this, that, well, okay, you said that service, you get more time. Where is that more time coming from? Well, when you spiritually serve, your mind becomes many, many times faster. Because you're thinking from a higher part of the mental body, and in some cases you may be actually using part of your Buddhic body, and the process of time that is used up in thinking is significant for most people, and that may be significantly reduced. Some of you may know this, but like when I do these shows, a few seconds in most cases, certainly no more than a minute before I go on the air, that's when I create the show that you're hearing right now. And it sounds impossible, I know. A lot of people say, oh, that guy's just nonsense. He can't do that anyway. But I do. And when I say I create the show, I don't mean I just come up with a topic and then start randomly talking about it. I mean, from beginning to end, I have the whole show done. Now, that sounds impossible, but it's not, because I'm doing this show as a spiritual service, and it's one of the things I consider high use of my time, and it just doesn't take any time other than to speak over the radio to all of you and communicate what I've already done. And so this is a great savings to me, because if I were to not be doing this spiritual service, let's say somebody was paying me a huge amount of money, which they're not, to do this, it might take me days to literally come up with everything I'm telling you in this two-hour period of time and to make sure that it all fits together in some kind of crazy cohesive system, and that it wouldn't sound like I'm just a bumbling idiot talking on the radio about a subject, but without really having any connection to anything. So you can see that is how spiritual use of time changes the whole equation. If I'm spiritually serving somebody, all of the necessary periods of time that most people spend to do that spiritual service takes me virtually no time at all. Well, that's a tremendous advantage, isn't it? And if my whole life were to be of spiritual service, that I would experience almost infinite amounts of time. There is a kind of caveat to this statement, because I co-serve with others who may not be at the same level of responsibility and the same level of capability and the same level of responsibility, and therefore the same time issues for them won't be the same. And I might be waiting around, so to speak, for them to do things that I could do myself, but they need to, as part of my spiritual service to them, they need to do it, not me. And so, in an odd way, the time that I experience as wasted time is part of my service to others, but it's because they take more time, they waste some time, due to illusions that I might not have. And then again, I might have illusions they don't have. So sometimes I might waste some of their time through my illusions. But that's the nature of co-serving with other people in a spiritual sense. And this is part of what it means to co-serve. That sometimes your waste of time comes from others, not necessarily from your direct interactions, but from the kind of through the other people you serve with interactions. That means that you're functioning as a unit or as one. And many people do function that way. So that's important to recognize. So, at any rate, I hope this is kind of making some sense for us at this point. One of the things that I have, we'll say, come up a lot from both people asking questions and people making statements is that it really seems like a lot of life is wasted time. People tell me this. Of course, I don't find that much in my life, but I understand the nature of that sensation. It may lead to a state of depression or to a state of futility. And I want to address that tonight because I think that those are, in terms of spiritual use of time, one of the things that you could combat pretty easily if you decide to lead a more spiritual life and to use your time for spiritual purposes. First thing I want to mention, anybody out there who really thinks that they just have a lot of wasted time in their life and they don't know what to do with it, give me a call. I'll help you find ways of serving. I got lots of them. So anyone who thinks that, and I've said this many times on the air, by the way, I do it somewhat tongue-in-cheek because I've had a few people take me up on it, and they only do it once because when I give them the answers, they go, oh, you didn't tell me that. Okay, forget it. Never mind. Forget I even called you. Goodbye. Once in a while, someone does really want to do that. And I make some suggestions. And they actually say, you know what? Sounds great to me. Okay, sign me up. But that's the rare cases. Maybe once a year or something like that, that occurs. In my life, anyway. I would love it to happen every day. It's a great thing when it does. Anyway, let me give you a minute or two or three to cool your brain down here and talk about just a couple things that I have mentioned before. I want to tell you about Dr. Brendan McCarthy. He's got a place called Protea Life, and it's over in Chandler, Arizona. Now, if you're not from Arizona, and I know a lot of you aren't, you might even consider a consultation with this guy on the phone, because he's a really brilliant man, brilliant guy. And he's a doctor of naturopathic medicine. And he's got a good foundation about some elements of allopathic medicine, which is like a regular medical doctor. But he also knows most of the natural ways of treating people. And I appreciate him. I think he's a great guy. And when I do an ad for him, so to speak, I might pay for this. I'm doing this because I really think that other people should know about him. And you can get a hold of him if you're interested. Even if you don't live here, if you have a question that's pertinent, he might be able to answer that question on the phone, refer you to somebody else he knows. I'd rather trust somebody he knows rather than just go to the phone book or something, or the internet. And you can reach him at 480. I got to get this phone number right here. 557? That's an odd number for Phoenix, but I guess it must be right. 557-9095. That's 480-557-9095. His address, if you're familiar with Chandler, it's 1949 West Ray Road. It's over by Dobson and Ray, for those of you who are familiar with this area. I realize most of you aren't. That's okay. But anyway, the thing about him that's really cool is that he doesn't have this illusion of medicine, you know, and he talks pretty straight, has a good foundation about the human body, understands a lot about how it functions, and it stays up with the most creative ways that are more natural ways to treat various injuries, diseases, etc. Brendan McCarthy, that's his name. Speaking of doctors, another fellow that I got his, some orthotics from, his name is Dr. Jarrett. And he has a system called Theta Orthotics. Now, why do I like them? Because they deal with feet, which is structurally part of the whole body in a sense, in all three dimensions of time and space together. So when you wear these things, you're affecting your body, your physical body, in the three dimensions that it exists in. That's where the theta concept comes from. And you can change the third dimension, which is the height of the arch that the orthotic creates with his system. Most orthotics do not work that way. They create an artificial average for people. May help some, may hurt others, and may do nothing for a few in those cases. Dr. Jarrett's system, which is based upon differential calculus, creates an arch that is exactly right for the person that's using them, and it's individual. And what he's attempting to do is to gradually restructure your foot to either the way it was at some point earlier in your life. That's for folks who, as we get older, we lose some of the correct arch. And for a few people who are born just with not very good ones in their feet in the first place, the structure of the foot is wrong, it creates a really good structured arch that also changes the way the foot falls as you move it. And it allows the adjustment to change diseases of the foot, we'll call it, or problems in the foot, and can eliminate some from fairly serious foot conditions, while at the same time, it gets you to stand in a way which is healthier for your back, hips, knees, the places that usually take the most amount of brunt when you're not walking with a correct foot. So try look on the internet if you want to find him. I think I have a sheet here that gives me more information about how to get a hold of him. I got all of this information on my desk. Let me see if I can find it here. If I can, I'll tell you about it in a second. And if I can't, you can go to Theta Orthotics. You know what? Someone took it off my desk, but that doesn't matter. Theta Orthotics, and you can find out there by typing in Theta Orthotics. How to contact him. And if you do, tell him I told you about it over the radio. All right. So let's continue on now about time. The spiritual use of time is a shift in motive and focus of our life. And it alters almost everything about our life from a personal structure, personally thinking of things, to a other-focused, focused-out, soul-focused method of life. Excuse me. As I was saying, when we change this perspective, we gain tremendous amounts of time. And so the idea that time in some way is fixed to the more spiritual person, they know that's not true. And to the person who wants to be more spiritual, they need to find that out for themselves. You're probably not going to believe it until you do it. And then once you do it, you're going to say, God, that guy was right on the radio. well, or on the phone if you're listening on Skype. But either way, that guy was, he was telling the truth. This stuff really is true. Yeah, but you got to experience it because it's so illusionary. And we live in, the greatest illusion we have of existence is time in the physical world. It's a thing we have the most misunderstanding about and the most difficulty in getting a correct understanding. So to get this correct understanding, by creating a, we'll say, a life script for yourself over maybe several months of time, you can make yourself into a person who never worries about how much time you have because you have as much as you need because you're in constant service with two others, and therefore you create all the time you need to do that service. The two are synonymous. You always have enough time as long as you are in spiritual service. And you will never have enough time when you're not. Tell me that isn't an interesting statement. Now, what about interactions with others that are close to us in our lives? Well, this is where it gets difficult, and I think sticky. When one person, let's say you're married, and you have kids, and you decide that you're going to live with more spiritual use of time and live a spiritual life. Well, that's cool. That's great, except for one problem. You're not going to be living in the same time that your family is. That's a problem. Why is it such a problem? Well, because to them, your spiritual use of time will invoke more forces, a huge amount more forces in their life, because their goals are for selfish outcomes more so than yours are. And the results could be disastrous in some respects. First of all, you may not have a husband or wife anymore if you're married. And your children may become distant to you unless you can change it. And we're going to talk about how to change this. But so it has its pitfalls. It is not a pure panacea that you're going to end up in some definite positive outcome having decided now, because the guy on the radio said to do it or to try it, that you're going to live in a spiritual life using spiritual use of time as the guideline for this life, because everybody around you is going someplace else. And if you think that this is not such a big deal, it also transfers over to your boss or to your employees, if you are the owner of a business, to just huge numbers of people. You know, I don't really have employees, but I kind of consult with people who do. And the employees that they have always have a problem with me. Always. 100% of the time. It doesn't matter how much I'm friendly or try to be helpful or whatever, because I am using time for spiritual purposes, which even includes trying to help them to become more conscious, loving them in various ways that is good for them in their soul, but things that they don't want and they may need, but they don't want. And it results in an interesting series of conflicts that sometimes is almost incompatible. And that's just the beginning of some of the problems that you can have. All the areas that you make agreements in with people, those agreements usually have an element of time to them, whether they're written contracts or verbal ones or just what we call not contract, but maybe just kind of like, let's get together on this day and do this thing. The point I'm trying to make is that their perception of time, if they aren't living a spiritual life, and yours, are completely different. And their understanding of the meaning of what that time is to them versus you is a different thing. So you end up with conflicts. In almost every agreement you have with somebody. It isn't that they may not do what you agree upon within the time that you agree it in their mind, except that they don't do what they said they were going to do. They do a fraction of it, thinking that that's what the agreement meant, because they always alter in their mind the agreement to reach the level of what the time was that they wasted or used up to do whatever it was that you agreed upon, if they're selfish. Your response to this, if you're trying to lead a spiritual life and use time spiritually, is that every part of the time that you use in trying to have an agreement with somebody is to reach the full extent of your capabilities and responsibilities within the agreement you made with them to accomplish what you did for their sake so that they could accomplish more, enabling them to be even of greater service, even if they choose to be, and to complete their agreement. Their view on that is they don't care about what you're doing for them. They only care about meeting the minimal standards of the agreement based upon the amount of time they waste versus the amount of time they join with space, which may be minimal, to achieve a result that is relative and conditional upon how much time they believe they actually had, but most of that time was wasted, so they got very little done of the agreement that they made. And they think that it's perfectly okay. And they don't notice that what you have done is giving them even more time by having their concerns and their needs in mind, and they still squander that as well. If they're leading a selfish life, and it's about the agreement that you have with them, this kind of conflict goes on all over the place. So leading a spiritual life is a real problem. But the interesting thing is, if you are truly focused out, and this is difficult, and you're not caught in the illusion of wanting to try to control these folks or get angry at them because they're doing this stuff, you, by understanding the spiritual nature of time, if you're listening to tonight's show, this may be greatly helpful for this, you then realize the nature of the problem is in the illusion in the other person. You don't experience the forces from it because you don't expect anything different than what I suggested. And if you get something better than that, it's a joy. And if you don't get anything better than that, it's an understanding. But the only problem is that, as I said earlier in the show, the other person experiences more forces, even though you accept them at the level they're at. And why did they experience more forces? Because you got so much more done in an intelligent way than they were able to. And the forces are the comparison of themselves to the nature of the spiritual people around them or spiritual person and what they're doing. And those forces are internal to them, and there's nothing you can do. You can't take those forces away from them. They're just going to be there. They may be an encouragement for them to say, well, maybe I should live a life like this other person because they're doing much better than I'm doing. I experience a lot more forces. I'm jealous. I'm angry. I don't like the fact that they're getting everything done and I'm not. And it may be an encouragement for some, and it may be a battleground for others. When a person chooses the battleground, my suggestion is that you don't make any more agreements with them, in that area at least, because it just produces more and more forces, and it's an endless situation. You have to make them or let them be responsible for themselves and leave the situation alone. I counsel people on this all the time, and I give them the same answer. Because when someone else is not spiritual, and you are, you can't expect that they're going to instantly change. And they will experience the forces that you don't even notice, but you need to do some noticing, at least in a super empathic way, by recognizing that this is part of their existence, and you're not responsible for it, but they still are going to suffer to some extent as a result of even possibly interacting with you. It doesn't mean you should completely ignore them and leave them, because obviously they're going to suffer. But you also have to make a decision whether you want to make more agreements, or even at some earlier point terminate the ones that you can justify in doing so. Time is a problem, isn't it? Because we don't live in the same periods. That's the illusion of it. Understanding that other people are experiencing their time completely different from your experience of it is a key element to becoming more mature in a spiritual sense. And it makes you far better as a spiritual teacher or a spiritual leader to gain a good understanding about this. If you're not at that point or level, that's fine. It still helps you in dealing with all the friends and relatives that you and enemies that you may have around you, because you at least can understand the nature of their problems while you look for solutions. Now, let me try to give you some elements of how you can find those solutions for both yourself and for other people. You don't want to run away from people in a wanton, willy-nilly fashion just because they are unable to keep their agreements with you. What you need to do is to try to figure out, now this is going to sound strange, because I've already said a little bit contradictory to this, but I'll explain why it isn't. You need to figure out how you can make some agreement with a person, do some kind of functional element that adds to their ability to be intelligent in their coordinated responses with you, intelligent in their interactions here in the physical world. And this takes quite a bit of understanding. You're going to need to have a high level of consciousness to figure this out, because it's going to be different with every person. And you can't expect that most people are going to participate much with you in this. It's going to be you figuring it out for them and then finding an appropriate way to make some suggestions so that they can be open enough to hearing it and maybe considering making these agreements and changes in their life. It becomes particularly important if it's somebody that's very close to you. Children, yeah, for sure. Parents and grandparents, yeah. And, of course, your spouse or someone you're in a close relationship with, and then friends in general. It's less important with people that you're not that involved with, that close. But it's certainly important for that group of people that you attempt to do some of these things I'm going to suggest now. And here's where it gets, again, difficult for us to separate our personal interests for the service of others. You don't want to tell or force people to change their life. But you do want to be creative with people who can't keep their agreements to the level of finding where, if they can at all, keep some agreement. Because every agreement they can keep with you, even if it's minimal, you're building some level of intelligent activity between you and them. And you're helping to serve them. This is spiritual use of time. I know it's hard to believe this, but like I was talking about the employees that I sometimes have to interact with. They're not necessarily my employees, but again, I'm a kind of a consulting situation. And they need this because they can't do the quote-unquote job at a level that is the agreed-upon level with either me as a consultant or with usually others who I know. So what I look for is, well, okay, let's find what they can do that they can keep their agreement about. And then I have a discussion with them. And could you do this? You think you can do this within this period of time? And then I try to help them, because not only are they going to probably make mistakes in doing it, which is the waste of the time, but they probably won't be able to make up for those mistakes in time, and then they won't get done with the thing that I'm looking for, whatever it is, in agreement, within the period of time. So you have to calculate all that in. I do. And assume that there's going to be a certain level of mistakes, a certain redos, if you want to call it, and maybe some wasted resources in terms of materials and other than time. And I put all that into my equation, so to speak, when I come up with some way of being of service to someone else about their use of time. And then I do something that's very important. I look for a way in which the person can experience some level of givingness and spiritual service in what they're doing, besides just doing a job. So I make it a point that part of what I'm looking for in my agreement with them is that it improves them. Sometimes I'll say, well, you can add it to your resume or make a comment about how it really gives them another something that they can use the next time when they're working and doing something for someone else. Give them some means of finding value in givingness, that it isn't just doing a job, that they're providing something that is of value, just in keeping an agreement and trying to do it within a period of time that is helpful, and most importantly, in cutting down their level of mistakes, which comes from illusion. When they make mistakes, instead of saying, oh, you made a stupid mistake, you're a jerk, what you do is you go over how they made the mistake, what they could do to improve upon it so they don't make the same mistake again, and different things like that. Sometimes I'll ask them, maybe in the future where they made the same mistake over and over again, how about writing it down and then reading it back to me, making sure that we're on the same page about this, because sometimes I'm not sure you are hearing me in a way that's helpful. Or just have them say it back. That sometimes will work. I find most mistakes that people make comes from the inability to hear what the needs are coming from me or others around me, that they're saying to the other person, which guides them in how to do whatever they're supposed to be doing as an intelligent activity. So a lot of people say, well, they maybe don't have good hearing. Well, it's not really about hearing. Their ears work okay. It's what happens between the ears and their thought, their mind, that isn't working too good. There's a lot of egotism in folks. And so the egotism causes some of the relevant, important information to bounce off, and a person does things the way they want to do them rather than what their agreement is to do it. And then they'll even claim that they never made the agreement to do it the way whatever that agreement was. That is a big part of the mistake process. Getting over that is tough. And sometimes you have to cut down the activities that you agree upon to do with other folks to reach the level where they can hear in the ego sense, open-mindedness sense, what it is that you're going to be doing together, or they'll be doing for you, or you'll be doing part and they'll be doing part. But you need to reach the level where their egotism, and worse if it was arrogance, is not blocking them so that you truly have an agreement and they truly have a level of responsibility that they can apply, and it's determined, hopefully they determine, that their capabilities are great enough to do it. And that leads me to the next point. Make sure that the capabilities of all the people around you are adequate, whether or not, even if they can hear you and everything else, if they're not capable to do the job, or capable of co-serving, or capable of whatever it is that you're involved in together, to increase the level of intelligence in your interactions, your communication has to go way up. And then it may be required that you teach them and or show them things that they don't have in capability, and they may need to even practice some things that require coordination or eye-hand coordination or whatever, to reach the level to be able to capably do whatever it is they're going to do, whether it's co-service, being a job, being just part of some other interactional mode that you're with them, maybe recreation or whatever it is. It doesn't matter. Most people don't want to do that. And I'll tell you where the problems come in. Most people say, well, if I have to teach them, I have to do all this, it's easier for me to just do it myself. How many times have you felt that way? And or follow that reasoning in belief that that's perfectly justified, but it's not spiritual use of time. Now, this is going to confuse some people. But spiritual use of time is helping other people to be better at spiritually using time. If you're spiritually using time, but only for yourself and everybody else around you is getting lazy and or lacking knowledge and not understanding what the heck they're doing, that's not a spiritual use of time. You may think it is because you're using your time that way, you think. But in reality, you're creating forces now in opposition to your own spiritual use of time in others. And that will eventually come back to you karmically. So that all the time you think you're saving by doing it yourself is lost in other more esoteric ways and will be a net loss. This was a really difficult thing for me to learn. Took a lot of time for me to get over the illusion about that. And I know people close to me who still have problems with this because it's a very difficult thing to learn. Of course, you can do it better yourself, a lot faster. Why wait around for somebody else to try to figure this thing out when they don't even care about it so much? Because if they want to truly, even if they're not always doing it, want to live with a better spiritual use of time themselves, your obligation is to them and help them do that. And not take that away from them just because you can do it better at this moment than they can. It's not a good enough. It's not only not a good enough reason, it's a bad reason. Lots of bad karma can come out of that. You don't want to do that. But it's tough to resist this, especially if you're a leader. If you're a leader of a group or leader of anything, this is a difficult thing for people in leadership roles because they oftentimes feel an obligation to a wider source to do something themselves. And sometimes it's necessary to do that. We'll get to that in a few minutes. But most of the time, that isn't true. Most of the time, you can let people make mistakes. You can let people to find out where their capabilities really are. And teach them and spend the time to help them because that's what spiritual use of time is. It includes that. And if you disagree with me, you can give me a call. We can talk about this more because a lot of people might. This is a sticking point for some people that they don't like this part of spiritual time. Now, there are issues. There are times when you cannot allow people to even learn or to experience the learning and the practicing, etc. When the balance of harm that is done to others is too great in comparison to the amount that you're serving that person to learn something, etc. Then you may have to do it yourself or get somebody else to help you because there is that issue. And this is a real difficult thing because you have to be pretty darn conscious to figure this out. What does the least harm and the most good in any situation for the most amount of people and saves the most amount of time for the most amount of people? This is getting into the more, we'll call it complex esoteric issues that still are very pertinent because if you're listening to the show, you probably are thinking about or are leading a spiritual life, and this is where it gets into the thick of things. It's not as cut and dry as the beginning of the show may have made it seem, because there are so many complicated factors in relationships between people. We don't live in an isolated world with just two or three people we deal with, and that's it. The things we do have major impacts on untold numbers. So, how do you, how do you figure that one out? Well, let me give you some suggestions. If, especially if you're a leader, this is critical, but it doesn't matter, because we're all kind of leaders of sorts in some capacity. We all have greater capacities and capabilities than somebody else does about some things. So, you know, we all have teaching and leading functions in some circumstances. When we're trying to calculate the good versus harm and evaluate that, it requires the highest level of consciousness we can employ. It means that we have to look at all three parts of time in an equal way, the past, the present, and the future. Those have to be balanced. Now, the least important is going to surprise you. The least important is the future in most circumstances, because the future is the most difficult to get correct. And so when we try to understand how things are going to be affected in some future sense, and we make that the most important element, there are so many things that may modify that future from our perspective that it's just as likely we're going to be wrong than right. Whereas the present becomes a very important issue. And as does the past for a different reason. So the past part of time, now time has these three elements to it, remember that. The past part of time is about what we've done before and having integrity to that before issue. And not do things that are are lacking in integrity. At the same time we're doing that, we have to be concerned about the present, and are we in the present sense, in present tense, dealing with people in a way which is honest and helpful, and is it creating for people in the immediate moment the least amount of harm and the most amount of good that we can possibly create? Keeping those two together is more important than what you believe is the future. But you try to still balance the future as best as you can, knowing how the future part of time is going to approximate what you think is going to be the answer, and try to help people to coordinate themselves in ways in which you can get them to reach the same level of what you're looking for yourself and others, in creating the most amount of good, the least amount of harm in some future sense. The further you go out into the future, the more indefinite the results, and the less important you could claim that what you do today will greatly affect that outcome at some point, because there's so many interactive, undefinable, changeable things that can take place that you can't go very far into the future and balance it to the past and present. You can usually only relegate it to a relatively small portion, but still you have to balance, and it's a difficult thing for most people. You have to accept people's mistakes as being the level of their lack of consciousness and lack of willingness to take intelligent actions. You've just got to do that, even though it's like grit your teeth and go with it sort of thing. When you do that, you don't like say, well, I accept this person for being just a selfish, no good Nick. what you do is you say, I accept this person for being this level of selfishness, and I'll see if I can help them to become a little less selfish through co-participating, co-interacting with them, so that they will be a little less selfish the next time. I do this all the time, by the way. I don't want you to think that I'm not, I don't try to practice what I tell you. That doesn't mean that people are going to love you for it. They may hate you for it, because they still believe it, and they actually do experience more forces when they don't follow what you say. And then they blame you for those forces, which is kind of weird. And there is some truth to it. I mean, they wouldn't feel so bad if you hadn't said anything in the first place. So, in their mind, they have every right to be miffed about where you're coming from, as far as they're concerned. I know that sounds a little strange, but it is the truth. And understanding the astral nature of people and being somewhat empathic to that astral nature helps you in this whole process of functioning. All right, let me move now to this question of direction of oneself. I dealt with the interactional mode. Maybe if we can, I'll say a few more things about it before the end of the show. But let me get to this question now. You want to improve yourself. Improving yourself means improving everybody else around you if you're functioning as a soul as best as you can. So you can't do this in an isolated fashion. So when you're making out your lists of things and how you're going to improve the time use, your model is going to be not about just yourself, but how does this affect all the other people that you have interaction with. That's the rub. Okay. See, that's why I said it's going to take months and not days or a week or something, because that's where it gets difficult. You may spend several days on one person that you know and how you can improve your interactions, make them more intelligent in the face of having agreements and interactions and co-servicing with this one other person. It could easily take several days to figure out how to do that with just one person. You might know 100 people. You could see how this could become a very long exercise. But doing it is tremendously beneficial because you have so much more time when you're done with it. You have more time from your perspective of all the things you're going to change about yourself, and you have more time from those that you serve to be more functional in their use of time in a spiritual sense. Just tremendous. And people stop being as much an obstacle to you as they are a co-service. But that may take years to be fully realized. Still, it's better to start now than never. Okay, what are some of the ways that you can reach a better, higher level of consciousness in the spiritual use of time? Ask people to give you an opinion of how you're using your time and how it may be wasting their time and how they think you're wasting your own time, the mistakes they think you're making, and be humble. Humility is the most important element of a soul. You want to hear what other people have to say about you. So when someone starts saying something about you, be quiet and listen. And then ask questions to help yourself understand their perspective. Don't be immediately defensive. Rather, ask questions to gain understanding of what it was that they were trying to communicate with you. Then use this feedback from all the people that you know, along with whatever other sources of information that you can come by, including your own creation of or recreation, changing of your life to a more spiritual one, to produce, we'll call it, life scripts that tremendously, hopefully, cut down your own illusions and lot more time to do a lot more things in. And in accurate and helpful ways, it doesn't harm others and produces as much good as possible. If you can complete this, we'll call it a huge exercise, the results would be, or might be, I should say, that you have become the true co-creator of your life as it exists in the universe. And you will feel, this is my opinion, tremendously empowered in your own existence. You will never say, again, I just don't have enough time to do this or that. I'm just not capable of doing this or that. You won't have those negative experiences because you'll have changed yourself from a personal, relatively small self, selfish person into, gradually, much more of your soul. And in that process, you will have done the same in pieces with so many others because you now see yourself as the actualizer of your life rather than the effect of the forces from other people against you and from other things against you in your life. It's a totally different perspective. Talk about the word empowerment. The results are phenomenal because almost all of the negative issues that people have about time and capabilities of doing certain things within time go away. All the problems just disappear because you have so many more tools in your toolbox, from being a soul to helping others to be souls, that the illusions just drop away. And you see yourself as who you really are, a soul, a co-creator with God, and a co-creator with so many others that are also functioning and acting, interacting with you as a soul. The world changes for you. And each person that is not functioning as a soul, you see as a challenge and a means of being of some service to them in some way. You do not see them as, oh, just no good son of a bitches. You see them as generally worth serving. Now, I want to cover the exceptions to what I just said in this whole show, actually. And that is, there are some people you should not try to serve. There are some people that everything I just said should not be applicable. Those people are either evil or are in some fashion, in a significant way, co-participating with evil but haven't reached the full state of evil. Do not try to serve those people and don't try to change them from the use of the methods of tonight's show. Why not? Shouldn't I be good and loving towards everybody? Shouldn't I love those evil folks? No. And here's the reason why. Remember, when you are co-serving and doing all the wonderful things I said in tonight's show, you are attempting to help someone to become closer to God and to be a co-server with God. Evil people want to destroy God, want to destroy life, and they're going to want to destroy your life. Or people that are influenced a great deal by evil people, but they may not be so yet themselves. Same thing. So your quote-unquote service to them or reaching any agreements with them will only lead to them being destructive to you. So what am I saying? Don't make agreements with evil people, period. If you make an agreement with the devil, you're always going to lose. So that's the reason they become an exception, because there is no way to serve them other than to let them be self-destructive to themselves so that they are less destructive to others. and to let other people not to make agreements with them, to let other people know not to depend upon them, to let other people know that they are very destructive and that they are evil. That's your job, if you want to call it that. That is your responsibility. Let others know about it. Let others see it. Shine a light on evil, because there's nothing else you can do other than that to help. And if they are acting in a forceful way, you have the right to use whatever force to self-defend and to get others who have even more understanding, more consciousness, to battle their forces on a wider scale that may be beyond your capabilities. But nonetheless, you do need to be able to at least see evil if you're going to start following a spiritual life, because you don't want to involve yourself in agreements with evil. And if you do, watch out. Bad things are likely to take place. Now, if you already have agreements with some evil folk, because you've made some mistakes, obviously, then there are some things you can do. And I don't have a lot of time here. I'll try to go through them as quickly as I can. The first thing is to shine light on them, even though you're in some unfortunate agreement, and to expect nothing but destructive force coming back towards you. But as you shine light on them and let others know about the evil, they become your allies, and the evil has less chances to use others against you. So it's very important to do this, even though nothing may come up. It's worthwhile to try, because you need to, unfortunately, in this world, use some counterforce to evil, or they'll win and destroy you. In the astral world, it's different. There are different rules that apply because the physics change. I don't have time to explain all that right now. But here, we do have to do this. And I'm talking about tonight mostly about leading a spiritual life and time here in the physical world. That's mostly what we're talking about. I don't have time to shift and talk about all the changes in physics and everything else in the world. So here, if you have any kind of agreement, it may be an agreement that you were forced into or whatever you think you were forced into, you need to expose the evil. You need to also make sure that the evil doesn't have some way of forcing you into another kind of agreement that is a substitute for the way you're trying to get out of, that may make things much worse. Generally speaking, there is no way to bargain. And I know that a lot of people don't believe what I'm saying, and they think, well, why can't I go negotiate with the evil ones and find some solution to this? Because you can't negotiate with these folks because they don't have the same goal. Your goal is, if you're listening to the show, I assume, is to create goodness in the world, to make God more of your life and everybody else's, to live as a soul. Their goal is to get rid of their soul if they haven't already, to destroy yours, destroy your life, and to destroy the life of everything else, and to take power from you, to de-empower you, to destroy you at your cost and their benefit. There's no overlapping of goals. There's no commonality of interest. There's nothing that's redeeming in that kind of relationship. And no, they're not just wayward folks who just, if you love them more, they'll just see the light and come over. Not if they're evil. Or if they're tremendously influenced by others who are evil. There's little you can do about them in that respect. And be prepared for the fallout from the forces that you're going to create by shining light on them. Because that's a force, remember. You create forces when you're creating light and the other folks aren't. They experience that as forces. So they're going to scream and they're going to yell and there's going to be some problems. But nonetheless, if you follow the perspective that I'm suggesting, you'll be okay. Also, make sure you ask others. If you have trouble seeing evil, ask others what they think. One of the problems in this world is most people don't believe in evil or see it. And if they do believe in it, they usually see it too late, but it's happening to them or those around them. So we need to bone up on this thing because it's a very destructive thing. And we can improve this planet greatly if we could limit the evil that is existing on it, which is significant. Okay, well, we are definitely reaching the point where we're running out of time. Let me try to kind of sum up some things here. When we're talking about the spiritual use of time, we're talking about recognizing that time is like a commodity that you can create more of by joining it with space because it's a judgment of quality of itself in relationship to space, or you can waste it. And that's always your choice. And having that choice and knowing that you can control it makes your life into a totally different kind of thing. It gives you tremendous freedom, and you realize the more creative you are of God, of virtue, the more time you have to be more creative in the future, and the less so. If you got that concept from tonight's show, and I hope you did, then that's a big thing right there. I consider myself a winner tonight if you got that concept. And if you understand some of the other elements of what I explained and how to carry them out in your life, this could be a very practical change for you. And over a few months of time, I really believe that you can make a huge difference in how you use time. And that will make a difference in what kind of spiritual person you are and whether you can lead a spiritual life, a life or not. It's a tremendously helpful condition. I hope this makes sense. You can re-listen to the show. Remember, it'll be up in a few days. Re-listen to it because there was a lot covered. Well, listen, I am out of time for right now. And until next week, I want you to think about this. Until next week, while you're writing out all of your ideas about tonight's show. And remember, you can contact me. I am available. Until next week, this has been Niles McFlower for Why Life Is.